Hello, everybody. I'm hoping you can hear me. I have a 3-hour shear that I would like to give you all now. However, I know the people don't have the patience for that unless it's Tish above. So what I will do now is just give you the initial thoughts, or perhaps I'll call it the seed, of a number of thoughts that I want to explore regarding Purim. And they are directly related to the Megillah as well. And I think that we should really understand, as a general rule, that whenever we talk about Purim, we're talking about the Megillah. Meaning there's no part of Purim that is not intrinsically connected to the Megillah. The Megillah is Purim. And in fact, the Rambam, in his Mishneh Torah, in his compendium of all of the halachos, does not call it Hilchos Purim. He calls it Hilchos Megillah. Which means that everything about Purim is rooted in the Megillah. So with that brief introduction, let me jump into it. There is a halacha which is actually quite difficult for Jewish families to observe, and that is the halachic reality that women are just as obligated in the mitzvahs of Purim as men are. Now, while this seems wonderful and egalitarian, every Jewish family knows how difficult this is, especially when it comes to hearing the Megillah, when you have a family with young children, and both the mother and father have to go hear the Megillah. It involves a serious amount of logistical work to make it happen. Is there a baby at home that's sleeping? Is there a child at home that is not old enough to come with the parents to Megillah reading? Or children that are so young that they're sleeping at that time? So we have to work it out. However, it's clear that women share the obligations of Purim with men, and the way that the Gemara describes this is with the well-known phrase, "Af hein hayu ba'oso hanes." They were also involved in, even they were part of that nes, part of the miracle. So I'll tell you, for years, I had thought that that meant that since Haman wanted to kill all the Jews, and all the Jews meant Anoshim, Noshim, Vitaf, as it's phrased in the Megillah, men, women, and children. So women were part of the genocide as well. So that's why women have to keep the mitzvahs of Purim, even to listen to the Megillah. However, Rashi in Megillah, and in other places as well, I think there's a reference to it in Shabbos as well, says that the meaning of Avhin Hayubos Ahanais is a reference to Esther. Meaning that it's not that women were also involved in the miracle of Purim, that they were spared the genocide, because women and men were threatened with death. Rather, it's that women were involved as women, not because women are also Jews and women are also people. It's the idea that women as women were involved in the story. And this is something that you see in the Megillah very, very early on. And that's with Vashti. So that every part of the story of Megillas Esther has an inherent connection to women as well. The first part of the story is with Vashti. And then we move on, and that Achashverosh takes a new wife in Esther. And then we see, as the famous song Shoshanas Yaakov goes, that Zeresh, Haman's wife, plays a major role as well, in that she is the one who advises Haman to build the gallows for Mordechai. So that it starts with women, the middle of the story involves women, and the conclusion of the story involves women as women as well. And not only women, but I'll add, and I think this is important, even though it's not a halacha, wives. Not just women as women, but women as wives, and the very important role that they play as the wives of those husbands in the story. In fact, the well-known Gemara, which is the basis for much halachic discussion, is that Esther was in fact also married to Mordechai. Achashverosh didn't care, and it was kept secret, and it's a part of the complexity of the story, but between Vashti and Esther and Zeresh, women are an intrinsic part of the Megillah, and wives are an intrinsic part of the Megillah as well. However, the beginning, with Vashti, who seems merely to be this character who's pushed out of the story early on just to make room for Esther, is actually a deeper part of the story than we realize. There are many Gemaras that talk about the evil of Vashti as well, but I don't want to refer to the evil right now. I just want to discuss the element of Vashti as it's discussed here in Perek Aleph in chapter 1. And that is the element of Vashti's party. Now you might say, well, what's the big deal? Maybe it was, you know, in the model of Haredi Jewry, that it was separate seating. You had men having a party on one side of the wall, and on the other side of the wall you had the women, like a Hasidish wedding. However, I don't think that's what was happening. And I'm going to read to you the line when we discover Vashti for the first time. Gam Vashti Hamalka Asasam Ishte Nashim Beis Hamalchus Asher LaMelech Achashverosh. Vashti, the queen, also made a feast for the women in the royal palace, but Beis Hamalchus is the house of royalty that belonged to the king Achashverosh. So for this, we need one other element, and with this I'll close today. And this is based on the thought of the Malbim. And that is that Vashti wasn't merely having a women's party in another room. Vashti was having a competing feast for the women in the royal house. Meaning that Vashti saw her role in the Persian Empire as being equal with Achashverosh's role. The Gemara makes clear that Vashti was of royal lineage, and this Achashverosh, who we are talking about now in Megillas Esther, was not of royal lineage, meaning that Vashti considered herself to be the real queen, the real power of the throne, and this is why she made her own feast, and she was saying effectively, I'm not just going to eat the shirayim of my husband's feast, I am having my own royal feast. And this is why, specifically, Achashverosh went to summon Vashti to tell everyone how beautiful she was. That's actually very deep, because this is, in effect, Achashverosh telling the whole world that Vashti is nothing but a trophy wife. And that was, according to the Medrash, the exact opposite of the reality. If anything, Vashti was the power, and Achashverosh was the trophy. However, in that male-dominated world, Achashverosh felt a need to assert himself, so that is why he said she should come and wear the crown. And the Gemara has an amazing explanation of that, that she should wear the crown and only the crown, meaning she should not wear anything else. So now, that's rather hard for us to understand politically how that makes any sense. I think what this means is, not necessarily in a literal sense that she should wear nothing but the crown, but that she would be seen merely as an object. Meaning, come, let me show everyone how pretty my wife is. How pretty my wife is. She is the power. She is of the royal family of Belshazzar. She is the one who's the real royalty. She's the one who's the real power. Achashverosh is the nothing. So, in effect, Achashverosh turned the tables on her in this way. And that's why when she refused Achashverosh's counsel, right, Mehuman, Memuchan advised Achashverosh that this refusal of her to come is not only a private marital matter between you and her, this affects the relationship involved in all marriages in the kingdom. And you cannot let this refusal stand. So that this is the first piece of the Megillah working through what it means for a husband to tell a wife to do something, and the wife refuses because she feels the main power is mine. A friend of mine from way back told me that he knew that in Russia, before the war, in some circles where the women were known to be very powerful women, there were some very powerful rebbetzins in pre-war Lithuania, how men were sometimes referred to as kiddushmachers, meaning The women were the ones working. The women were the ones making the parnassa in the home. And what were the husbands good for? You had the husband make kiddush. Because that's how it is. But the women were not fooled by the fact that their husbands were making kiddush to think that the husbands were actually the ones in charge. This is the first piece to the puzzle. There are many other pieces of the puzzle as well. We'll see later how Esther is the anti-Vashti in this sense, but how by the end of the story, the tables are really turned. I'll leave that in your head to think about, and why not read through the Megillah now, before Purim, to get a sense, to get a memory for all of the details of the story. I know that we all know the generals, but I think many of us from year to year forget some of the particulars and the order in which things happened. But this piece with Vashti is extremely important and will factor in greatly later. All right, everybody, take care.